Hello, everybody, and welcome to Turning Towards Life. We are Lizzie and Justin from Third Space. We are here again. Lizzie, it's our 454th week. And I actually really love all these numbers that go one way and they go the other way the same. It's a palindromic week. And it's very, very good to be back. And I'm, Lizzie, feeling the benefits of practice enormously. We say this very often, that this isn't, there are all kinds of things in the world that sort of arrive in our lives as a one-off delight or one-off rescue or something like that. And then there's something else that's different from practicing, from being in conversation and being open to one another. And I've been thinking a lot this week, Lizzie, also about this listening and what it is to really quieten ourselves down so we can listen to one another. And it struck me that unlike many other very excellent podcasts there are in the world, and there are many, in a way, this is a podcast about listening. Because mostly what you and I get to say comes not from anything we already know to say, but comes from the way that we listen to one another and to ourselves as we speak. And so I want to make a big shout out for the gifts and the virtues of listening and what it brings. And it's lovely to be here listening with you. And we have a source from you this week.
So Justin, I want to... As you were talking, I was just thinking of the wonderful group of people who are doing Turning Towards Life Live with us, which is a one Monday every month for 3 hours that we gather. And we do this thing that you're talking about, which is this listening thing. And our last gathering was so extraordinarily beautiful, the kind of listening that happened there and the kind of feeling of being in community and being in support of one another and the kindness. It was just so beautiful. And we have our next one beginning, the doors open again in September. So I wanted just to make an invitation to anyone to reach out to us. If you wanted to talk to somebody in Turning Towards Life Live, you could. We could put you in touch. There's so much generosity there. So, and you could talk to us directly and find out more if you wanted. But we would love you to join us. The feeling of community and actually talking to each other in the space is really beautiful. So I just wanted to mention that. And we have this poem today by the wonderful Ingrid Goff Madoff. And the poem is called My Heart Opened and I Went In. And I think this is for anyone, Justin, who's been really hurt or have found themselves entirely confused about what on earth is going on and a possible way to hold those experiences. I know that this poem has held me in the unknowingness of when everything becomes unfamiliar and we don't know ourselves anymore. So here we go. Ingrid says, "One day I looked around and all my certainties were gone. While once I thought I knew some things, now there was nothing to be sure of. How could life go on? Business as usual? Shattered, I looked for bits of the lost threads. Whenever I found one, I would grasp hold and add it to a frail weaving back of the old ways. But my weaving was too loose, and so it scattered like a cobweb on the first strong wind. To be empty-handed, empty of reason, was this safe? How would I survive it? I had no choice. My heart opened, and I went in."
Thank you, Lizzie. So for all of you who are with us, you can find Ingrid's poem in the show notes. Also, the details about how to contact us and support this project and join Turning Towards Life Live are all there and on our website. And I want to say thank you to Ingrid for this. We'll post a link to Ingrid's work also in the show notes and on our website. And this is My Heart Opened and I Went In by Ingrid Goff Madoff. One day, I looked around and all my certainties were gone. While once I'd thought I knew some things, now there was nothing to be sure of. How could life go on, business as usual? Shattered, I looked for bits of the lost threads, and whenever I found one, I would grasp hold and add it to a frail weaving back of the old ways. but my weaving was too loose, and so it scattered like a cobweb on the first strong wind. To be empty-handed, empty of reason, was this safe? How would I survive it? I had no choice. My heart opened and I went in.
Thank you, Justin. So as you were reading, I was thrown back into those experiences when I have not known which way is up and how to function and put one foot in front of the other because something has happened inside of me, mostly triggered by things happening outside of me that have me confused and like wide-eyed with confusion and hurt and all those things. And I felt like someone was speaking what happens. You know, how comforting it is when you're in an experience and it only belongs on the inside and then someone says some words and says, oh, it's like this. And maybe it's like this. And you're like, yes, yes, I didn't know how to find words for that. But that's what this is like. So I'm appreciating the kind of, also the gentleness of the way Ingrid speaks and says this, that names it as if it's to do with weaving and cobwebs and threads and empty-handedness. It's such a kind way to talk about things that really are quite, for me anyway, like rough and painful. And somehow even that is helpful, that my inner experience is noticed with gentleness, that my world is held with nuance and kind of metaphoricalness that makes sense to me. So I really, really appreciate this poem. And it's in this wonderful book of Ingrid's called What Holds Us, New and Selected Poems by Ingrid Goff-Madoff. And it's one of the ones with the ear of the page turned down for me to come back to when these things happen. Because in those times of confusion, I've often felt like, well, I've got to fix something. I've got to do something. There's something horribly wrong here. And actually to be invited into my heart as the safe place that I can go and to let the mystery of whatever that is have its place. Like even in this moment, I can feel it. Of course, there's kerfuffles in my life happening and things like this happen a lot because I'm a person in the world with children and relationships and family and work and all, you know, it all happens. But to feel like there's another way to go when everything falls apart than just staying completely discombobulated and confused or trying to fix something or continuing on with the drama or whatever I would do. This whole, and the choicelessness as well, really, in the last lines of Ingrid's poem really resonate with me, that in some ways, you know, when you're in the complexity of it, you're like, well, I, there's nothing I can do. This has happened now. I can't change it. I can't do anything. And so that kind of choicelessness resonates that, oh, well, this probably is the only thing to do is open my heart and go in. And there, a different quality of holding comes and a different kind of way of seeing and being that's gentler and has different things to say. So it's almost like letting a different part of me speak than is the one that's wounded in a way, so that that part of me can then be in relationship to the wound. It can hold the wound. It can be kind when all I'm feeling is rage. It's like it takes me in the constellation of my parts, maybe, to the part that's most helpful as I read this.
I'm really glad you said what the title of the book is, Lizzie, because it gives what holds us, because it gives context to this poem. And as you've been talking, my mind went back to a time, and of course, one of the things that, in a way, that inevitably goes on, at least for me in reading this poem, is it has me want to look at where are the times in my life when all the certainties were gone, and what was that like, and what happened. And I recognize in very much in Ingrid's writing a way in me which can go, I got a long way in my life by understanding things and having smart things to say about things. And I've relied on it as a strategy, and sometimes it's very useful. But there are times, as Ingrid points out, when our attempts to clutch everything together and to understand it all don't help very much. And I think that the title, the meta title of this, the book title, is so helpful and necessary, and it's implied by everything that you've been saying, is that maybe when our ordinary strategies no longer work, particularly our attempts to understand what on earth it is we're in the midst of, maybe knowing that there's something that can hold us is the first move, and that something that can hold us isn't, it's in us. So I think our hearts obviously are of us, but I also think they're of something much bigger, and that we all animal life, everything's got hearts, and it goes back for billions of years. Like, hearts have been around a really long time. Yeah. Anyway, how I'm getting to this is in 2011, so 15 years ago, I had a sudden and very dramatic health event where we were out watching a professional tennis match, and I got very, very strong chest pains and then blacked out and ended up in hospital. And for a few days, it looked quite possible that something very badly wrong had gone on with my heart. And my physical heart, because I think we're talking here like physical heart and sort of metaphorical heart all at the same time. It was terrifying. And for the first time, I think probably the first time in my adult life where I'd really met the possibility that I might not live very long. Maybe this is the weekend where my life ends, that kind of scale of things. And that was very much one of these moments. I spent quite a lot of time panicking and quite a lot of time thinking things through. And then the most amazing thing happened, which was that my friend Anna messaged me, and she said, "You can trust your heart. Your heart will hold you." And I know she didn't mean that she knew I was going to be well. Maybe it turned out there wasn't anything wrong with my heart, actually. But I know that that's not what she was pointing at. I got that whatever was going to happen was going to happen. And maybe I'd be fine, and maybe I wouldn't be. And maybe the doctors would be able to help if it was something life-threatening, and maybe they wouldn't. I got all of that. And then she pointed to something else, which is, whether I survive this or not, I can survive it because my own heart can hold me. And it hadn't occurred to me until Anna sent me these words that that was even possible. I hadn't known how to locate in myself something trustworthy and open and holding that I didn't have to do anything to get. It already was. It was already given to me by virtue of being alive and being human. There it was. And I could, and I didn't have to do all of my looking for the bits of the lost threads that I couldn't hold on to anyway. And I didn't have to work it out. I didn't have to know what my life would be like next week if I was okay. I didn't have to do any of that. That it was possible. And I couldn't be safe in the ways that I wanted to be safe. And so I had no choice. And then Anna did what Ingrid's doing and said, "Your heart can hold this, you know. You can trust your heart. It's such a gift." But more than telling the story of Anna's gift and Ingrid's gift to us, I think what I'm wanting to point to that I'm seeing is that I don't think, Lizzie, I learned anywhere really that there was something of just being alive that was trustworthy. I think up until that point, I lived mostly as if nothing was trustworthy and everything needed to be figured out and everything was about to be a danger, which in one way can be true. There are lots of dangers in the world of all kinds. But to know that beyond that, whatever happens, there's something that opens in us that can carry us through, that can accompany us, that you don't actually have to do anything to get. You don't have to be strong to get it. You don't have to be clever to get it. You don't have to be likable to get it. You don't have to be beautiful to get it. You don't have to be any of those things. It simply is the inheritance of being a human, that this is waiting for us. Sometimes we need somebody else to tell us, but that's the other thing. Sometimes actually we need an Ingrid or an Anna or a Lizzie or to say, I see this in you.
That's just where my whole mind went, Justin. And, you know, I spoke about Turning Towards Life Live at the beginning of this. And so often it happens, doesn't it, in these our conversations that we come back to community and togetherness. Because as you were telling your story, I feel my heart coming online in the listening of imagining you in that fearful place, imagining Anna's message to you arriving, imagining you kind of taking a deep breath and thinking, oh, there's something else here than all my fear and all my terror and my worry and all those things, and the kind of the dropping down. And in some way, that's a tall order as a human being on your own lying in a bed. Like, we need each other. You needed Anna to send you that message and remind you of a thing that is the alreadiness that you learned of in that time, the givenness of life, the what holds us always, whether we can know it or not. And when we are listening to one another, you know, you began all of this conversation by talking about the fact this is practice in listening. I'm making the connection in this moment between living as a listener and practicing listening and our capacity to even be in touch with our hearts. And so connection feels like the access point. Genuine listening connection feels like the access point to the kind of intelligence that we really need in our lives to be able to be here and to be faithful to just everything that's happened, is going to happen, is happening. And so I feel a renewed understanding or something or commitment to what it means to enable togetherness. You know, what it means to turn up here every week and sit here and receive you. And whatever musings you have in the moment that are of this moment and because of the source we have and our relationship and all that. And then make that as an extension to the world in some way, which we do by putting this into a podcast form and then inviting people to be with us to see what it's like to do actually as a practice in our own lives together. And it feels really... it just feels really important. Like, if that's the only thing we do, you know, if that's the only thing that we get up to as humans and is see what we can do to play our small part in knitting people together, that they might access their hearts and that we get to do that too. That feels like, I don't know in this moment what's more valuable than that. And I can feel in all the kind of conflicts I'm in the world at the moment, this matters in all those places. I'm already seeing them differently by sitting here with you and listening to you and feeling what it feels to listen and to be in touch with my heart and then be in relationship from my heart. It's so easy to live in my, maybe easy is the right word, but also like habitual. Like, I know that that's what I'm doing. I'm thinking about stuff all the time. Thinking, why did she say that? And what have I even done? And I'm, you know, all of that exists in the kind of chitter chatter in my head. And as I sit here with you and drop into my heartfelt relatingness with you, it makes that possible in other directions too. It's not just me listening to you. That's the thing. It's the practice of listening that has me become different, that I relate to everybody, including you, differently when I'm in this kind of connection.
You're reminding me, Lizzie, of what a radical notion it is to assume that in each of us, I don't know if that's quite the right way of saying it, but I'll start there, is something sacred from which our life flows, and treating our hearts as something sacred. And a new angle on this came up as you were talking, because you were talking about various like conflicts and things that you're in, and we all, to be a human is to be in disagreement and difference with other people, inevitably, because we all carry around our own private inner world that can never be exactly the same as someone else's world. And it struck me that, I suppose it struck me, and this is where Ingrid's poem also takes me, is how wrong we can be about one another by being certain about one another. You know, that kind of sense of I understand the world, and it's completely reasonable that we try to do that, because there are some things where it really helps to know things. You know, it helps to know basic things, like if you put your hand into hot water, you'll injure yourself. Like, there are true things. But when it comes to one another, the same category doesn't apply in that way. And I can so easily, and I have done this, and I sometimes still do it, and I try not to do it, to do what Ingrid is inviting, to open and drop in. But any of us can walk around with a really firm story about, well, Lizzie, I know what you're thinking, and I know what you are thinking about me, and I know what this is. And it might be that there are some aspects of what I can see that have some usefulness to them, but much of that will be imagination. Imagination is, for some purposes, absolutely wonderful. But there's no substitute for doing what you said, which is to find a way to slow down together and to give up our rightness for the sake of hearing one another and being open to one another. And that's often rightly very hard. So I'm thinking about how much practice it takes, and how much time it takes, and how much patience it takes to do this, and how necessary it is. And I think it's always been necessary, but it's got really necessary now, because we live in a public world that seems very uninterested in understanding the insides of anyone, and very interested in dividing us into good and bad, right and wrong, which doesn't help with the job of meeting one another. So that the Ingrid's poem starts with the personal. It's about the inner view of one person, but it so clearly extends to what happens when you and I, and we have had our moments, obviously, Lizzie, because we care about one another and have known one another for a long time, where we've had to sit and slow down and go, let's slow down and see if we can each open our hearts enough that we can stay until something else. We've got no choice. If we want to survive this, we've got no choice but to slow down and open our hearts. And I have to trust that my heart will hold me and your heart will hold you, and that the universal heart from which our hearts come will hold us. And that is really, I think it's really counter to the public world at the moment, which, you know, as long as we think the world's ending tomorrow and everyone's out to get us, and all of that sort of rising alarm is very, I understand why it's so hard to do. It's really hard to do in a world that is telling us this is, I don't know what, waste of time, too slow, not productive enough. So I really feel the invitation in it, actually.
I was just thinking how also part of it is it's also very like trepidatious to live from a heartfelt place of listening with one another. You know, we've offered, for example, like in Turning Towards Life, saying, take this practice and do it with somebody you love or somebody you want to be in relationship with. And there, and also in myself, I can feel like when the context of the relationship isn't that, as in when people come to Turning Towards Life, we're setting the guidelines in order for people to do it. And so it kind of eases the way to do it. But to be that countercultural in the world where I would say to you, and you were my sister or my friend or a parent from school or a person at work, where I said, would you just be with me for an hour? And we're going to listen to one another in this way. It's really just to make that request is quite something, let alone to then actually do it together when we don't live like that together very well or very often or very normally. We live like ships in the night most of the time. Whereas you say, we've got all these thoughts about each other and we think we're right. And then in this practice, all of that has the possibility to be undone and rearranged, and the not knowingness and the mystery could come forth if I were to listen. And yet, just sitting across from one another and doing the thing and getting into that position is very countercultural. It's not normal to do that. So I'm feeling, I think you said the word radical at some point today, and I feel like it is a bit radical. And that word, I suddenly don't know what it means, which always happens to me here. But what I mean by radical is like, you might look at us and go, what on earth are you doing? Just sitting there listening to each other. It would be maybe alarming in some way. You know, I remember being in the South Bank Centre once, and there was a person doing like a sitting meditation, sitting staring at a wall, and everyone around. And I thought it was quite cool because we do that kind of thing. But there were people walking and staring, nudging each other. What's that guy? And what's he doing? It's a bit like that. You know, it's a bit weird in the context of what we normally do, which is say we're fine, carry on with things, have a chat, do some stuff together, go home and have tea and go to sleep. You know, it's like, it's not a practice that's mainstream, that's common, but it feels like it really matters for us to stand for it, because we know in our hearts, and whenever we gather people to do the practice, Justin, I literally have no doubt in my own heart that it matters and it works in service of our feeling more connected, feeling heard, feeling seen, feeling listened to, feeling part of something, feeling a sense of belonging. All of those things come because we do the practice and we have some lines in which we sit and some ways to be with one another that we talk about clearly that enables us to have this experience. And what did you say? 454 episodes. I'm just thinking, I don't know at what point, probably quite recently, I kind of realized what was going on here. But this is part of the like, oh, we've done it for so long and now I'm seeing what's become of us. As you said, there are things that are practices that you do again and again. And at the beginning, you can't know what's going to become. And then you begin to get an inkling of the becoming of a practice. And this is that recognition, I suppose, and a recommitment to doing the thing that feels extremely life-giving.
I'm thinking about a part of a conversation you and I had just before we came on air. I'm not sure if that's the right way to describe doing a podcast coming on air these days. But about, I'm thinking for myself about, given that there is no choice often, our what we think we know about the world and life and one another is going to get, we're going to find it falling apart somewhere. And the more, as Ingrid says, the more we hold on to it, the more it scatters like a cobweb in a strong wind. So what do you do when you conclude that I'm empty-handed, I'm empty, what on earth am I going to do? So I'm also just thinking, practically? And what one kind of practice is this one? But I also know, this is the part I said to you earlier, I know that for me, walking on my own is also a heart-opening practice. If I go for a very long walk, if I start out with something that I'm, you know, frightened about or worried about or that seems to be falling apart, and I hold on to it very closely and I go about my ordinary life, I probably contract around it. But if I just set out and point myself towards somewhere and walk for long enough on my own, my heart will open almost every time. And then I'm much more ready to come into, particularly if it's a difficulty or a misunderstanding with another person, or maybe it's that something in my life is falling apart, I'm much more ready to approach it in the way that Ingrid invites, sort of empty-handed, open-handed, empty-handed. And I think for those of us, I want to say it for those of us who might find sitting with another person and talking and listening in this way incredibly enlivening. Also for those of us for whom moving our own bodies, being on our own, taking some time away from the thing that's grabbing us can be, and there are a billion other practices. The important point about the practice, why I'm saying it, is I don't have to be strong to open my heart. I don't have to be somebody who opens my heart. I just have to go for a walk. My heart does it. That's the thing. As it also does here. So that's kind of where I'm left also, Lizzie, with wondering about, for each of us, how we have in our lives come to know what in our lives will help the last line of Ingrid's poem happen. My heart opened and I went in. It's really useful to know that about ourselves. And then to have it, enough of it in our lives that we can rely on it when we need it.
Oh, thank you, Justin. Thank you, Ingrid. Thank you, everyone, for being here. Thank you, Anna, for sending that message when you were in difficulty in 2011. And thank you, everyone, for listening, for being here. And we will be back next week with A Source Chosen by Justin. Thank you, everyone.
Thanks, Lizzie. Thanks, everyone.